What order are we doing these in?
You're up with HJR 16, are you in?
Oh, right, we are on.
Resource Committee is in session. In attendance are Representative Olson, Co-Chair Ramers, Co-Chair Samuels, Representative Seaton, Representative Elkins, Representative Ledoux, Representative Crawford. Representative Gatto is injured, but will be here shortly, we hope, to join us. And we are going to take up today HJR, CS for HJR 16. Representative Elkins, you were going to...
Yes, I have staff here to explain the changes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
For purposes of discussion, I move that we adopt the CS for HJR 1624-LS0748-G.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
There was no objection to my motion.
There was, yeah. No. Do I need one? I don't think so. Yep.
There's no objection to the motion, so
we have
the CS before us.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim Van Horn. I'm on the staff of Representative Elkins. After the original the testimony we heard the other day on House Joint Resolution Number 16, you now have before you a work copy of the committee substitute for that legislation. I draw your attention to page 3, lines 3 and 4. We've added, at the request of recommendation, one of the people called in, after Alaska State Legislature and affected local governments. And be it further resolved on line 7, again, after testimony, telephonic, we've added territories can be studied as a potential or nominated to be a World Heritage Site. It's the only changes to the legislation.
Representative Gatto has just joined us.
Thank you, sir, for that recognition.
I'm sorry.
Solemn.
That's all the testimony I have, Mr. Chairman. If you have any questions,
Are there any questions? Seeing none, we thank you very much. Is there any other public comment in the room? We had already closed public comment. Public comment is closed. Committee discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move CS for House Joint Resolution Number 16-G with the individual recommendation and the accompanying physical.
Any objection? Without objection, so moved. Well done, Representative Elkins.
Okay, next up, we're going to hit, just for the folks in the audience to get what exactly is on the agenda, we're going to take up HB 174, which deals with the CFAC fees. We're going to take that up next, followed by HB 142, I believe it's the governor's bill. And HB 71 will not be heard today. We're still working on that, and it will be taken up on Monday. So we distributed the CS for HB 174 at the previous meeting. And
is that version F?
What's that?
Version F?
Version F, I accept the motion to have that as the working document.
Move that we adopt version F, 24LS0676. /F is the working document.
Yeah.
Is there any objection to adopting that? Hearing none, that would be the document that we're working on. We'll take a brief at ease. Everybody. state was involved in litigation, the Carlson case, which said that we cannot charge out-of-state residents for licenses three times what we charge resident licenses. And we lost the case, so we had to come up with some other methodology of getting the money for CFEC. And the methodology that the bill does, right now, under current law, you take 0.4% of the value of the fishery, and you divide that up, and that's what the permit will pay for the permit to fish. The problem with that is that it's capped at $300. So some of these folks are going to be paying substantially more than that because the value of the fishery that they're fishing for is obviously more than the $300 permit. The other thing that the bill does is it slightly increases the license fee on a vessel, dependent on length. And what we've done in the bill, and Harry can go through the changes more specifically, but the original version of the bill had took away the $300 cap and had no cap. And what we've done now in this version is we put in a $3,000 cap on. And correct me if I'm wrong, Henry.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. We've also taken the fee schedule and gone up slightly for the boat length. That's in the CS also.
Yeah, for the record, I'm Henry Webb, staff to Representative Samuels. This CS, if we look on page, does two things different than the original bill. As Representative Samuels said, the originally it was a $300 cap. It goes to $3,000. On page 3, lines 1 and 2, you can see where that change is incorporated in the bill. And the other change is for the vessel fees. In the original bill, there was a compounding $15 increase in the fees. Up for the 0 to 25 foot vessels, it was the fee would go up from $20 to $35. For 25 to 50, it would go up $30, so on and so forth. In this version, in the interest of equity, those fees have gone up on page 2, lines 17 through 24. Those fees go up 20% across the board for all those fee those vessel classes. And in the interest of equity.
Yes.
And
so those are the changes. I think what I'd like to do is have CFEC come up and kind of give a little more in-depth overview of what the bill does.
Could I get from you the changes that were made between the time that this bill left the Fisheries Committee and...
The two changes that were made was instead of taking the cap away completely, we set the cap at $3,000 instead of $300. When it left Fisheries, it was a capless change at all. And what Fisheries had done was took the fees back to the original. They hadn't raised the fees on the vessels themselves at all. The original version that was in Fisheries went up by some cases, particularly in the smaller boats, up by 50 or 60%. Instead of $20, it was $35. So what we did is we took a little bit of a compromise there, is we did cap at a very, very high end. We capped the $3,000 for the most valuable fisheries, but we did increase some of the boat length also to try to balance out the waters a little bit here. So we only raised it, you know, a couple of bucks, I believe, $4 for the small boat. An overwhelming amount of the aggregate money is coming from the license, the $3,000 cap on the fees. And I said, that's the differences between what came out of Fisheries and what we've got before us now. And if I could invite Frank to come up and a little bit more in depth on what the bill does.
One additional thing through the chair. On the vessel fees, those fees have been in place for 10 years. So if you look at it in an annual sense, it would be a 2% annual increase, which is less than inflation. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Holman. I'm one of the three commissioners at the Limited Entry Commission. We appreciate your taking up the bill. I guess it just make a few comments in the way of background. Several of you were in the Fish Committee when we heard this, and so I'll, for the benefit of the others, the what's been occurring over a number of years, and I always like to start with this one because it kind of shows the situation in one picture, but I think it's in your packet and maybe on the last page of your packet. And it's sort of the reason for the bill. The, as the chairman said, there has been a decline in revenues to the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission because of the Carlson case was one reason. Consolidation of fisheries is another reason. Reduced permit values is another reason. So we have a definitely trend going that is a decreasing revenues, and CFEC is a receipt-supported agency. There are no general funds in it. We project that at the end of 06, we would not have enough receipts to cover the obligations that CFEC has in its budget and also in its obligations to the Fisherman's Fund and to the Commercial Fisheries Division of the Department of Fish and Game, which is the legislature has authorized use of the excess revenue from CFEC for commercial fishing purposes. Taking all of those obligations in addition to our budget, we project that we wouldn't have enough to cover. We had to make some adjustments to the because of the Carlson case in our statute, so we also included the fee increase in there going out so that we wouldn't have to, well, for one thing, so we wouldn't have to start laying off people, and for the second thing, we wouldn't have to come and ask the legislature for general fund monies, which nobody wants to probably see that happen. So looking forward to we thought this might be a good opportunity for a fee increase bill, and so that's what this bill does, and probably takes us out. We still think there will be a downward trend, but probably takes us out 7 or 8 years. So things would be obligations would be covered. The fee structure, the way it is, was artificially capped at $300, and what the bill, what the CS would do was to raise that cap to $3,000, and in that way, those fisheries that are high-value fisheries that have a high economic return would be paying their proportional share of the fees, where when they were capped at $300, they were held down to that level. So the statute says that the fees should reflect the economic return from the fishery, and so this more clearly aligns with the statutory requirement. There are a couple of housekeeping things in it that aren't significant in revenue, but just to clean up things, there's a number plate that goes on your vessel that we replace for $2, and that $2 is in statute, but it cost us $7.15 for the plate, so we thought probably it was time to adjust that, and so that's also in the bill. There's some backup in your packets for those that haven't seen it that will show, it's a page that looks like this that shows what happens by removing the $300 cap, and it spreads out those fisheries that have a high economic return, and you can see what the revenue is generated from that, and then the vessel license fee increases this form here, and it shows the increase. So these two give you the basis of what the increase would do. Happy to answer
questions. Yes, I did. I'm a little concerned because we're talking about the
equity of the 0.4% of the fishery, and yet them are saying the highest value fisheries we're going to cap so that we don't get 0.4% of the highest value fishery. We're getting something less than 0.4%. And can you give me the justification for charging higher percentages to our smaller inshore fisheries than the larger mega operations?
Capping the way the bill was originally was no cap, and so it spread out. There was some concern that expressed about a no cap that the commissions would be able to charge, the maximum that would where it would actually fall. So that they, I think there were some concern by some of the fisheries that could be unlimited with no cap. So I think there was some concern raised there. The cap at 3,000 only affects the highest value fishery. It would be more except for the cap, but all those below that are paying their proportional share.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess we're talking about proportional shares. We had a proportional share. If we're talking about taking a proportional value out of the fisheries, then we ought to be talking about proportional value and not saying, okay, but if you're a very wealthy fishery, now we won't take the same proportion. We'll basically shift that load to the less profitable fisheries. So, I'm concerned with that, and I'm also concerned with the growing trend and the possibility of consolidation in the fisheries, so that if we have cooperatives, if we have some other arrangement, which is what is being talked about, in our future and has actually occurred in a couple, we're going to have fewer vessels operating to get those fish. The value of the fishery is still there, but now we're capping not at the value of the fishery, but we're going to be, we could extremely depress the amount of revenue from a fishery that CFEC gets because we restructure a fishery and take it with fewer number of boats. And do you share that concern?
That, Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct assessment, and that's why I mentioned that we anticipate that the downward trend in revenue will probably continue, maybe not as steep as it is now, but as consolidation happens over the years, you do have fewer participants, so it's very likely that those participants' share will increase in the future.
Along the same lines, one thing that we tried to do when we put the vessel fees back in, the larger boats, I mean, we tried to make a balancing act, and I can argue either way on the cap should be there or not be there, but we tried to make the balancing act because you're not going to lose all of your money on this few boats that would have paid the $3,900. There's just not many of those. They're probably also going to be paying more in the boat length also. So what we tried to do is try to work with all of these various user groups, big, small, everybody else, and try to make the process move forward because nobody wants to kill the process as it goes forward. So we tried to negotiate it as best we could, which is why we got the cap, 10 times what it is now. So that's just so you know how the process went forward with what we tried to do. So, and we did talk with, just so you know, we did talk with Representative Thomas, had the amendment in fisheries to lower these back down. We did work with him also to make sure that he was comfortable with raising the boat fees, not the 60%, but the little bit. So we've done our juggling the last week trying to put this together. So with that, are there any other questions on the bill? Representative Ledoux?
How many boats does having a cap now affect? How many would be right now? How many of them would be over the cap?
Right now, it looks like out of about 21,000 vessels, there would be 265 that would be protected by the cap.
And without a cap, how much would they be paying now?
I might not have that. Let's see. It's probably in the range of a couple $100,000.
That's in the aggregate, not each.
No, not each. No, I'm sorry, in the aggregate. Okay. Yes. Yes. No.
Back page, you. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to shock anybody. Sorry.
Maybe amend my own bill here. The base fee was 265 permits, and this isn't exact because the fisheries aren't valued, but the top end right now for those few number of boats would be 3,900. They're also going to pay more in their licensure now.
Okay.
So you're not losing that's all correct. Of that money. So
that's correct.
And once again, the amount of money you're getting is...
I might answer it this way, Mr. Chairman, that the fiscal note originally without any changes to the original bill was about $2.3 million. The fiscal note now with these changes is about $1.9 million. So
yeah. And speaking as a private sector guy, we don't want to give government more money than they need. So yeah.
Just one more follow-up question. Are you still working with some of the boats that may be in the higher end fishery but are in a different location through regulations to make sure that, for example, boats that fish around Kodiak aren't charged the same as boats that fish out at the Bering Sea, even though they may be both doing pollock?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Ledoux. In your packet should be a letter to Representative Samuels from us saying that what the bill will do is simply to lift the cap, but by regulation we will establish a new fee structure, and we have already talked with several of the fishery associations, and during that public hearing process we will talk about the various vessel lengths, because now with the $300 cap a lot of the vessels we're all in the same category, so a small vessel and a large vessel paid the $300. But now, with spreading out this, the larger vessels, we will work to establish some new vessel lengths so that the smaller boats aren't charged the same as the larger boats because their return is going to be much smaller. But at $300, it didn't make very much difference, but now it would. So we've all already committed to doing that with the vessels and making some different vessel length categories.
Just one more follow-up.
Sure.
Well, in light of that and that there is going to be a public process to make sure that the smaller vessels, just because they're in a high-end fishery, don't pay the amount that the larger vessels do, is there really much justification for eliminating the cap for that small percentage of very, very affluent vessels?
Mr. Chairman, I think the cap was the $3,000 cap was put on after a discussion with a lot of give and take. It seemed to be an acceptable committee substitute to have a cap and to increase the vessel license fee on the larger vessels. It was sort of a balance.
Thank you.
I guess I'm just trying to balance this. I mean, the larger vessels, you're talking about going from $750 to $900, so it doesn't seem a very good balance if we're talking about putting a cap on, which is $300,000, and we're talking about recouping that in a $150 vessel license increase fee. So I mean, just realistically, I don't know that those two are the balancing things. But on the vessel size things, I'm sure glad to hear you're going to look at that. I'm not sure if we need to do it here or not, but it seems to me that I mean, every vessel that you license, I mean, there's a footage on the...
That's correct.
And I don't understand why you're having the category like 75 to 150 foot. I mean, a 76-foot vessel has a hugely different fishing power than a 149-foot vessel. Or 151-foot is just vastly different than a 250-foot vessel. And I'm wondering if you have considered just going to, you know, putting this on and doing it by footage so that you do so much per foot.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, there could be different ways to do this. We don't have any ability to change it. This is, it was a, the vessel fees are in statute, and so we were just raising the fee in statute. That already exists in there. So we didn't come up with those vessel lengths. I'm not sure where they came from, but they were in statute in that order. So it's something that happened some years ago because it hasn't been changed in at least 10 years. So we just went with sort of this, the simplest thing and increased these fees the way that it was already existing. There could be other ways to do it, but it would be you'd have to, I think, spend some time crafting it, and it would be a statutory change.
Yes. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my thing is we're making a statutory change, and it seems like we've got this inequity we built into this where we have a 76-foot vessel paying the same thing as a 150-foot vessel goes in, and it seems like, you know, you guys have all the data at hand so that you could make this whole thing come out. I mean, it's a pretty much going to be a linear operation the way you've got these new fees or the old fees set up, and it just seems that what we're doing is building in these problems where we inequitably tax fishing power the same on these broad categories, and if we're trying to get to some consistency of what's the fishing power, what's the value of the fishery, we would be better off just going and saying, okay, it's, you know, it's $20 a foot.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, it may take a more time and investigation to figure that out. I mean, it certainly could be done, but what I think the vessel license fee is the smaller part of the whole bill, and but the fishing power and the economic return really comes from the other part of the bill. That's the permit fee. The annual permit fee increase, and there we are basing it on the economic return from the fishery. So that's a category that's built into how much they return. I think the original on the vessel license fee was just to make sure that each vessel in Alaska waters was licensed, and it hasn't been the major contributor to the revenues. It's a part of it for sure, but the major contributor is the annual permit fee.
And Mr. Chairman, I realize that that's not the major contributor, but I know it's a major grouse among fishermen that, you know, if a person has a you know, a 51-foot vessel, he's 120, but if he's a 50-footer, then he's half the price. I mean, it just is. I just as things go forward, it just might make sense to have something that scales these up on an appropriate footage basis instead of these large category numbers. That's all I want.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Not today.
I understand. But I would like you to.
Would you like to
look at that and come forward as things move?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you have a suggestion on vessel lengths that seem appropriate to you,
I think he's talking about per foot. 50
so
foot
much pay. Per foot?
So much, yeah. Per foot. You find the aggregate amount of dollar with a minimum and a. That for another day, hopefully.
Well, we could look at that.
We juggled a lot. Are there any other questions? Is there anybody online wanting to testify? Anybody else in the audience wishing to testify? Bob? No?
would move CS for House Bill number 174, Resources, backslash F, with individual recommendations and a physical vote.
Any objection?
I'll object.
Okay.
For discussion here. Yeah, I do, I'm sorry I wasn't here at the last meeting, apparently. I was away for other things. But I do have a problem with developing a system that we are basing on 0.4%, and then with a cap when we are throughout the industry looking at changing the way to further consolidation, which means that in those fisheries, I mean, we have our scallop fishery right now, which I think is all being taken by probably three vessels. And so we've got this lucrative fishery that it may all be taken by one vessel because the person doesn't have to be on board. It's based on a corporation can own the ticket. So we can take our entire fishery and instead of having 0.4% return to the state on that fishery, by restructuring the fisheries, we're going to gain $3,000 is a total recovery to the state of all the fishery that's going to be done if it's taken under one boat, which is now legal to do. And so it just seemed to me with the cap in there, we're setting ourselves up for having to do it again, and because we're not going to, because of the very restructuring we're going through. And so that's why I was objecting to it. And
your objection to passing the bill out? Or?
No, I'll remove my objection to passing out. But.
And it does have another committee to go also. Okay. So it's so. Is there any further objection to moving 174 out? Hearing none. Please be 174 moves. Next up, we've got G142. In front of them. HB 142, by request of the governor, it came out of oil and gas, it's now in resources, and it's got finance after this. An act relating to regulation of underground injection under the Federal Safe Water Drinking Act and provided for an effective date. And to testify, we've got Dan Seamount with AOGCC online. Are you with us, Dan?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Dan Seamount for the record.
Okay. Go ahead with your testimony, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that I have about 10 minutes. Is that correct?
Well, right now you've probably got as much time as you really need, but...
Okay, well, as you can see in your packets...
Five might be better, or...
well, as you can see in your packets, I've provided 17 slides with quite a bit of information on it, and I will... probably just skim through them, describe what they are, not go into a lot of detail in the interest of time unless you would like me to.
Okay, well, if there's any questions, we'll just stop you along the way. So if anybody's got any questions, just flag me down and we'll stop the presentation. But go ahead, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is if this bill passed, we would, as you've stated, we would have the state would have the authority to take over responsibility of a very small number of waste disposal wells from EPA. And the result of the state, of the AOGCC taking over this responsibility, this oversight, would be probable savings in money and time to three organizations, or three groups of organizations, the state, the federal, and industry. It's either the first or second slide. It says AOGCC, EPA, UIC situation. That's just the agenda of what a full-blown talk would cover, and I'm going to touch on those. Basically, as I said before, well, the situation we have right now is we have two agencies regulating basically the same types of wells, and results in redundancy between the agencies, a lot of confusion between industry and the agencies, and that results in a lot of time and money being spent trying to figure out what types of waste goes down what kind of wells. The next slide shows a picture of a pipeline and a drilling rig and the subsurface below the drilling rig. The purpose of this slide is to just reinforce the fact that the AOGCC regulates what goes on underneath the ground in the subsurface. And one of our most important mandates is the protection of underground sources of fresh water. And then if you go to the next slide, it says underground injection program. We right now oversee the Class 2 program. There's five classes and a slide or two down the road, you'll see what each class represents. But basically, the best place to put oil field waste or any kind of waste is deep underground near where it's been produced or generated. The other type of well that we regulate under this class, and it's the highest number of UIC wells relating to the oil field are the injection wells that enhance oil recovery. And the enhanced oil recovery from these wells have resulted in billions of dollars of revenue to the state. So it's a very important program. The next slide shows the where in our statute gives us the authority to regulate these Class 2 wells and where our authority is in protection of fresh underground sources of drinking water. What the bill is going to do is modify Section H, and the next slide is just a repeat of the bill that you have in front of you, and the change is going to be that not only will we have authority to take over the Class 2 wells, which we do right now, but we'll assume control of the Class 1 wells. And if you go to the next slide, it talks about the situation we have right now, two agencies performing the same job, one protecting a non-existent resource, and this is the first time I've said that here, that non-existent resource is underground supplies of fresh water. Where these Class 1 wells exist on the North Slope, there is no fresh water to protect. So that's a step down the road to where, you know, we're talking about just eliminating Class 1 wells on the North Slope altogether and just doing only Class 2 wells. But that's the next step after this bill passes and after we assume control of the Class 1 program. The last line or two on this slide says EPA doesn't think this is possible. When we first ran this idea of taking over what's called partial primacy, just taking one the Class 1 wells and not all five of the classes, EPA responded by saying they didn't think that would be allowed under the Safe Drinking Water Act, but they support us, and we have formed a task force with the EPA, and we're working on innovative and ingenious ways to achieve this partial primacy. And there are, in fact, three states in different regions of the EPA that do have partial primacy. So we think that we're going to be able to reach some sort of agreement with EPA. The next slide shows the five classes of wells that were created under the Safe Drinking Water Act. Class 1 is supposed to take industrial, hazardous, and non-hazardous municipal waste. They're injected below the freshwater aquifers. Class 2, the AOGCC has primacy over. Class 3 is mining. There are no Class 3 wells in Alaska. Class 4 wells have been outlawed. There are none in existence. They have to do with injection of radioactive waste. And Class 5 wells are the most numerous in Alaska, and they take whatever waste or whatever doesn't fit in the other four classes. next slide is a map of Alaska. As you can see, there are 1,155 Class II wells in the state. They are all either on the North Slope or in Cook Inlet, and AOGCC oversees them. They handle injection of oil-filled material. And you can also see that there are only 7 1 Class I wells in the state. There are very few of them for EPA to oversee all the way from Seattle. The next slide are some statistics. Basically, over 98% of the injected material in this state go into Class II wells, oil field material. I'm not talking about, you know, the Class V material. The next slide goes into more detail on what the situation is. The biggest problem we see is there's a confusion by operators over what waste is allowed to be disposed of in each class of well. And they go between two agencies trying to figure it out, and they throw a lot of manpower at it. Our contention is that all wastes on the North Slope are directly associated with hydrocarbon production, and they should all be Class II wells. EPA doesn't agree with us, obviously, on that by requiring the Class I wells. There would not be any waste in the areas of this class of these Class I wells if it were not for the North Slope infrastructure, and all the North Slope infrastructure is intrinsically related to the production of oil and gas, and we think that is a definition that should be applied, and if it is, then there should only be class II wells should be required up there at this time. But much time and energy is expended for determining where this waste goes, and there's a lot of tracking done by industry and government. Often there are the same type of fluids go down different wells. One goes down a Class I well, but one goes down a Class II well. They're the same type of fluid. They were used for the same thing. For example, in the cementing of wells, you get something called cement rinsate. If the rinsate's been down the well and come back up, the annulus, then that qualifies under EPA's view to go down a Class II well. However, if it wasn't all used up and you have some that rinsate left at the surface didn't go down the Class I well, that didn't go down the well, then it needs to go down a Class I well. So they separate this exact same fluid out, take it to two different wells. Sometimes they're right next to each other. They're injected down. They go into the same zone. And that's just one of the examples of where we have problems with the situation right now. So the next slide would kind of summarize a lot of the outcomes of the program as it is right now. As I said before, it protects a non-existent resource, which is fresh water. There is no underground source of fresh water on the North Slope. It's an inefficient permit process. Among other things, EPA approvals are generally much slower than AOGCC's. There are onerous and costly stipulations concerning well integrity. Even though these both types of wells are essentially constructed the same, EPA has no permanent on-site field inspectors, whereas the state has five, two of which are on the slope at all times. And as I said before, when EPA does any work on these wells, they have to send people up from Seattle.
Hey, Dan?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Ralph Samuels again. Hey, I remember in oil and gas, EPA is not really opposed to this bill, are they?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, thank you. You can continue. Are there any other questions? No? Okay.
Okay, the next slide. I won't go into detail. Its purpose is to show that there's a Class I well on the left. It's a cross-section through the Prudhoe Bay area. The well on the left shows sort of a schematic of a Class I well. They're both constructed the same. The Class 2 well actually affords better confinement and better protection of the environment because it's deeper than the Class 1 well. There really isn't much difference at all between them. The next slide I've already discussed, so I won't go into it. You can read it at your leisure. The slide after that shows the comparison between the cost of operating a Class 1 well and a Class 2 well. It's about $1 a barrel difference, more expensive to operate a Class 1 well than a Class 2 well. So now the final three slides, we have our options. We can conduct business as usual, which means that we don't have to put any more effort into this initiative, but we're going to continue with the same confusion, same cost to the taxpayer and to industry. Two agencies are going to be doing the same work. The approval process is going to continue to be inefficient and time-consuming. And not only is it not the operator's preference, I don't think it's anybody's preference to continue with the situation the way it is. As I said, and as you said, Mr. Chairman, EPA is supportive of us. So the last slide shows what our options and solutions are, and this bill would allow us to proceed. The first option is the most likely to occur the soonest, and that would be the AOGCC would obtain primacy over EPA's oversight of two well classes, Class 1 and Class 2. This will result in less industry confusion and a lot of cost savings. In the long run, we see one class of well for all disposal, at least on the North Slope, and well, only on the North Slope, where there are no underground sources of drinking water. And that would be a Class 2 program overseen by the AOGCC. In order to do that, we would need passage of this bill plus a favorable ruling by EPA. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seamount. Are there any questions for Dan? Representative Ledoux.
So even if this bill passes, this doesn't necessarily mean that anything changes. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is exactly correct. As I said before, we have a task force, a four-person task force with EPA that we meet regularly, and we're trying to figure out how would we make a concrete change to the situation.
Follow up? Yes.
So if you get this task force in place already, what exactly then is this authorizing you to do different than the task force?
Through the chair, Representative, this would authorize, we would need this language put in the statute for us to legally take over the program.
So if the task force says this is the step we should go, we're going to need this bill sooner or later anyway. We're just saying the legislature thinks it's a good idea that you do this, so continue down the road.
Mr. Chairman, I think legally we would have to have this.
Sooner or later.
Yes, that is correct.
Representative Ledoux, and then Olson, and then Gatto.
Would you only need it sooner or later if the EPA actually approves something?
Representative Ledoux, yes, that is correct. If the EPA, if we can't reach agreement with the EPA, then the bill would be superfluous.
Follow up?
Then I guess I'm having a hard time understanding, since you've got this task force going with the EPA anyway, why don't you see whether the EPA is going to approve it? And if the EPA is willing to approve something, would it... Wouldn't that be the appropriate time to ask for the legislative authority?
Unless it's May 13th.
That's correct. We are trying to act fast on this. We won't act fast enough before. I mean, it's not going to happen before the session ends. And if it were to happen, you know, in the summer, we would like to move on it right away.
Thank you.
Representative Olson?
What position has the North Slope Borough taken on this?
through the chair, Representative Olson, I don't know.
Do we have anybody online to testify for me?
Anybody else online?
So obviously not much of a position then.
In oil and gas, they didn't come out. We had testimony both from AOGCC and from the EPA that was similar to this, that like the EPA wants to do this also. Representative Goddard, do you have a question?
I did. Just a small question. You said there's no fresh water, no drinking water available there. Do you truck it in, or how do you obtain it?
Oh, Representative Gatto, through the chair, all the water that's used is surface water. I'm talking about underground supplies of drinking water.
And just curious, the surface water used drinkable quality, or is there some processing that's required?
I don't know, but I would think that there would be some, you know, processing to, purify and sterilize it, but I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, one more question. I was just trying to think, you know, you're going to, obviously when you do an operation like this, you wind up with some surface contamination, and since you have permafrost, this contamination is simply going to flow in some direction, and I don't know if it's possible to contaminate a lake or some other area nearby, or is it just so little that it doesn't matter?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think that there is minimal contamination through these disposal operations. It's a very clean operation up there.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Seamount? And there's nobody in the audience wanting to testify. Okay.
Moving on.
Representative Elkins.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move House Bill 142 / back A with individual recommendations and a zero physical limit.
Is there any objection to that? Hearing none, it moves. HB 71.
That's the right version.
Zero physical. What's that? There's a small with attached physical notes.
Second.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, it moves. HB 71, we will hear, that is the Peninsula Exploration Tax Credit Bill, will be heard on Monday in Resources. That we're adjourned.